Hello, I'm Alec Hogg, and this is the BizNews Edge. Today is Monday, the 6th of July. Our anchor interview today is with Donald Mackay. He's the founder and chief executive of XA Global Trade Advisors. And we talked to him about the big story on Friday where the deputy president and the premier of Gauteng, both people with, well, we can't exactly call them unblemished records, were in attendance when the Chinese company Chery came in to take over the Nissan plant in Roslyn. We'll be talking more about that with Donald in the key story today. But let's kick off with a research report that came from the Common Sense. And this was about who really owns the shares listed on the JSE. The headline is that black South Africans hold an estimated 2/3 of stocks on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, with whites about 1/3 thereof. This goes completely against all of the information or propaganda, if you like, that has been sent to South Africans through the news media. And indeed, it is something that the Common Sense took a lot of time working through. Now, what they looked at was they took all of the shares listed on the JSE and first of all stripped out roughly 1/3 of those, because those are owned by foreign investors. And then they worked through the public investment commissioners, private pension funds, state holdings, retail shareholders, and BEE structures, bucket by bucket, to get to the final number. They pushed the assumptions to the most conservative that they could, and even then, they couldn't come below 60% in black hands, which is right when you have a look at the demographics of South Africa, or rather aligns with it, but it shows how far we've come as a democracy. Now that we need to realign our thinking on all of this. What does it mean? What's the so what here? Well, it cuts directly against a nothing has changed in 30 years narrative. So it certainly has changed a lot in South Africa. Tension, of course, is that the real transfer of ownership on the JSE is not necessarily reflected in deeper per capita wealth per population group. So there's still a gap that exists there. It's not really surprising, because the white sector of the population, who were advantaged up until 1994, had the ability to create capital structures within themselves. Even though they're a smaller part of the demographics, it's not surprising that they would have a higher wealth basis given where they come from and because, generally speaking, better educated. However, an ownership statistic like this, that 2/3 of the JSE listed shares in South African hands are in black hands, will change the political conversation. It must be taken into account when in future people say things haven't changed in South Africa. Well, as we all know, those of us who are on the street and where the tacky hits the tar, it certainly has. Well, it's exactly 1 year ago today that General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi stood up in KwaZulu-Natal with a presentation that Paul O'Sullivan says was done on somebody else's laptop, and gave South Africa a blistering insight into the real problems that exist in the whole police services. It was something that the style or the way that it was done has people, some people, O'Sullivan amongst them, very unhappy. They didn't like the fact that you had these policemen in battle fatigues, essentially, and automatic rifles flanking Mkhwanazi and while he was making these statements. On the other hand, most South Africans are extremely grateful that the general decided to blow through all of the protocols and tell the country about what was really happening. It has already delivered a crime kingpin who had police brass on speed dial, a dozen others who are facing trial and the police minister, Mkunu, suspended and unlikely to return. It has escalated further. Midlanga Commission has been grilling a lot of the people who have been dipping into the system illegally. General Feroz Khan has been exposed as having links to the Carnylink cigarette empire, which itself funds Malema's EFF. And it was Carnylink was actually co-founded, would you believe, by some one of the directors included the apartheid assassin Craig Williamson. Stranger than fiction. Cost of the truth so far in real terms, already two witnesses have been shot. One of them's dead, the other one's fighting for his life. John Madison wrote on BizNews today a very pointed piece marking the anniversary. Go and have a read of it. It really does unpack the major issues here. Still unresolved is there's no answer on why the police missed the July 2021 unrest. The planning that went on, there was no intelligence and more than 300 people were killed there. Contrast that with last week's very well-contained anti-migrant protests. It's proof that good intelligence, especially in the police, saves lives. You've got to ask, though, the question here is Mkhwanazi a necessary disruptor, or O'Sullivan's claim that the general was himself compromised and should have disclosed his position. And in fact, O'Sullivan maintains that a whistleblower needs to have clean hands. But does the messenger's flaws undo the value of what got exposed? Well, I'm not sure on O'Sullivan's point of view, but I am sure on exactly what ordinary South Africans believe. Well, let's get into our main interview for the day. And Donald Mackay has given us insight into a piece that I ran and published on, that was published on BizNews today, a boardroom talk, which is where I give my opinion, I guess you could call it. Chery, the Chinese car maker, has just opened its doors at the old Nissan plant in Rosslyn. Paul Mashatile was there to cut the ribbon. On the surface, a foreign investment win and of a stature important enough to get the deputy president in person. Underneath it, there's a much murkier story about who's actually paying for all of this and who's benefiting. There's a subsidy double dip. There's a 40 billion rand a year split between just seven companies that we as taxpayers, as ordinary citizens of South Africa, are footing the bill for. And there's a car buyer who doesn't really know what's going on. Well, I sat down with trade expert Donald Mackay, who's the founder and leader at XA Global Trade Advisors, to unpack this. At BNC 8, Donald Mackay joined us to tell us what's really going on with the whole trade story and worse, the subsidizations that South African taxpayers are giving to companies, a lot of them in the motor industry, which, well, are debatable at best. And now the whole thing has been brought into very sharp focus after the decision by Paul Mashatile to go to China in 2023, come back, and now he's opened up a factory. He was there on Friday for a company called Chery. Now, the problem in all of this is it looks like a double dip. What I mean by that is that the Chinese government gives their manufacturers a subsidy and the South African government gives our manufacturers a subsidy as well. So it was only a matter of time, in my opinion anyway, before some sharp operator, probably from China, were to see the opportunity and then to take advantage. Donald, you're the expert on these issues. Am I barking up wrong trees here?
No, so I can't really comment on the Chinese side of this transaction, but our automotive industry in South Africa is built on a fairly complicated subsidy program. So at the heart of manufacturing cars in South Africa is a subsidy program. And put differently, if we took away the subsidy, we wouldn't make cars in South Africa. And Cherry, just like all of the other producers, is going to take full advantage of that program. Otherwise, they would never have done the deal to purchase the Nissan factory.
Okay, but surely at some point in time, you're going to imagine that there'll be other manufacturers who'll be coming in, because the European companies are getting outpriced in the South African market in a big way, and they don't get subsidies. And we do know that 4% of GDP goes to subsidize Chinese manufacturers. So it just seems as though they got an unfair advantage. Whether or not we should have subsidy in the first place, we're going to talk about in a moment. But doesn't this open the gates for, say, VW then selling off its plant to another China, BYK, or another Chinese manufacturer, or someone else from another part of the world that is also producing different type of or cheaper products, and so that they too can come and take advantage of this?
Yes, absolutely. So we, you know, the alternative we've got to look at very carefully, which is for many of these plants which are not viable, and the next target that comes to mind for me is Mercedes-Benz in East London. You know, if you're not producing vehicles at a profitable rate, you know, there's a point at which either the government is going to have to lift subsidies to a point that will never get through National Treasury, or you close up, or you find someone else who can make it work. So, you know, I would far rather not have the plant close than to concern myself with who purchased it. But we must be honest and say, this is not a normal commercial transaction as you would have with any other acquisition from abroad.
How so?
Well, the consumer in South Africa effectively funds the subsidies. We do that in a couple of ways. The one is we pay a fairly significant premium on our cars because they are made locally, or even because they are imported by a local manufacturer. So the biggest hit consumers take through the subsidies, we pay more for cars. Now, the argument is made, well, it's worth it because making cars in South Africa has a very deep value chain. Maybe their argument's right or not. We will find out when the review of the APDP is completed. But it does come with a cost. In addition to that, there are direct subsidies, so cash given to these companies. There are taxes foregone. And so the issue goes on. And in the last Treasury set of numbers, we were over 40 billion rand a year. If we combine all of the different types of subsidies for automotive, which is effectively going to seven companies. So it's a lot of money.
40 billion rand a year, which goes to seven companies.
Yes.
If you put that into context, that's about 3 percentage points on VAT. So our VAT could be dropped to 12%. Imagine the stimulus that could do to the economy if you were to get rid of the subsidy program. But I guess what bothers me more at the moment has to be, and certainly it's a lot of money, but it's like a honeypot that's sitting there for any manufacturer around the world saying, okay, I'll do what Cherry did. Come into South Africa, essentially send over parts of the vehicle. In other words, completely knock down assembly, which is what they're doing. They're not actually manufacturing here. And then enjoy the subsidy at the same time. Surely the whole program was put together with some different consequence in mind.
Yes. So a couple of things. The first is that the program was never meant to be evergreen, whereas now, you know, it looks like it will never, ever end. The second problem is South Africa has become increasingly unattractive to manufacture anything, which means the subsidy becomes more and more important to an investment decision, because every time our ports don't work or insert another infrastructural or safety failure in South Africa, there isn't a natural kind of competitive position these companies are in, which means there's pressure on government to keep increasing that support if you want them here. And of course, as we know, Alec, we're not addressing those deeper underlying issues that would create a competitive environment to manufacturing. We're using subsidies, tariffs, all of these things as an alternative to fixing the basics. And that simply is not sustainable.
What about these transformation funds. At the BizNews conference, you explained that they're very opaque. They're opaque. And that we don't know where the money's going. We just know a lot of money's going in there. And they could be slush funds like the type that Paul O'Sullivan gets hot under the collar about with the crime intelligence operation. And they seem to be growing and growing. Did the Cherry team from China inject, as other companies have, into these transformation funds?
Yeah, but they don't appear to have made a contribution if I look at the Competition Tribunal's notes on the merger. So if we have a look, for example, at the Vodacom merger, that was $300 million they had to throw in. Coca-Cola had to put $220 million into the localization support fund and so on, and many more of those. This deal does not appear to be attracting that as a condition. Now, I don't know what the reason is why some transactions have to make the contribution and others don't, but this one does not appear to be bound by a similar condition.
Sure, that's going to raise all kinds of questions, particularly that Panyaza and Mashatile have been the driving forces here, and they certainly don't have an unblemished track record. But Donald, maybe just to move to the next point of all of this, why did Nissan leave in the first place if it's so attractive to make cars in South Africa?
Well, I think it's increasingly unattractive to make cars here. So, and like I said, make all things here. The second problem is the automotive world is shifting everywhere. It's not just a South African issue. South Africa is overly dependent on an export market for our vehicles, and we are not really producing what many of the consumers want to buy. We're not going to, you know, the story of we're going to replace Europe with Africa or insert, you know, US with Africa is also not going to work unless we fundamentally change the models we manufacture. So the C-Class Merc is never going to be a big seller in Tanzania, but we're not producing the little Suzukis or, you know, whatever other cheaper cars Africa will consume. So, yeah, I think that is a problem. I think a second problem is the drivetrain is shifting as we move to hybrids, as we move to electric vehicles. We're going to increasingly have a smaller and smaller portion of our supply chain coming from South Africa. And I think that raises very, very serious questions about the long-term feasibility of the industry.
So the idea was bring foreign manufacturers here. They will create a supply chain. In other words, lots of other little businesses around it. And as a result of that, it's not a bad idea to subsidize the or seed capital almost to kickstart it. Well, it hasn't been seed capital. It continues to do that. And worse now, the supply chain, as you were saying, is contracting. And certainly what Cherry have done, if others do the same thing, there won't be a supply chain anyway.
Yeah, I think that's probably overstating the problem a little bit. To access the money in the subsidy program, you have to have a certain amount of local content. So what Cherry presumably will be doing, although it's a bit early to tell at the moment, but what Cherry will probably be doing is procuring some goods from local component manufacturers and some from imported. It's unlikely that they would do semi-knockdown, which is effectively kind of a car in a box that you just assemble here. If they do the CKD model, which is kind of the BMW and the previous Nissan model, which is a substantial portion, around 38% of what you procure is local and the balance is imported. My guess is that Cherry's going to do something similar, but we would only know those details when the factory comes online.
Well, the CEO of Cherry, Tony Liu, said that the plant will initially rely on basically CKD kits, while it will move step by step to build a supplier base. Now, in South Africa, you make a promise and no one tends to check up on you. Is there a different story here with the motor industry?
Yeah, there is in a way, because there's quite an intense audit process and claim process to get your money. So my My gut feel, again, we'd have to wait and see for the detail, but my gut feel is it's harder to do that in the automotive sector. But on the other hand, we've had BAIC down in the Eastern Cape, who I think have produced like 4 cars in all of the years that they've been here. And so, you know, I'm not entirely sure what happens with Chery, but I certainly do hope that the investment does see an ever-deepening local supply chain. But we will have to see, Alec.
I made a mistake in an article that I wrote saying that the import subsidy, import duty was 30%. You've corrected me off air to say it's 25%. That's still a big chunk. But I want to, and I think many South Africans would love to know, is this just one subsidy that was previously paid to Nissan being switched across to Chery, or is there something more to this?
Yeah, so my guess is that Chery will roughly fill the shoes that Nissan left empty, and they'll come in and they will largely replace. But again, there's a lot of detail. The calculation of the actual subsidy is quite complicated. It doesn't sort of flow just as a cash payment to your account. My guess is that the intention certainly would be that Chery roughly sits in the same spot as Nissan after all of this.
And do you have any idea how much money is involved here, or indeed how much it's costing South African car buyers, car owners, to have this subsidy?
Well, that's a complicated problem to answer offhand, but let me maybe put it to you this way. A couple of years ago, we did a benchmark study, and we took a C-Class Mercedes-Benz, which is manufactured in East London, and we looked at the price of it sold at a dealership in Boksburg, just online. And then we went and looked at the same vehicle sold at a dealership in Manhattan. And the South African vehicle, if I have my numbers correct, was about 30% more expensive than the Manhattan version. Now, a lot has changed since then, since President Trump has come in and he's done all sorts of other stuff. But at that point, I think it would be fair to say we were paying a fairly significant premium. And that's not the best way to do a study, but it is indicative. I mean, quite simply, if you'd walked into the dealership in Manhattan of the most expensive real estate in the world, you would have paid less for your South African-made Merc than here. And that perhaps is all of the story.
Why is there no outrage on this, Donald?
Well, I don't think most people have a sense of how much of a duty is contained in the price of the goods that they purchase. So most people don't walk into Checkers, purchase a braai pack of chicken, and realize it contains a 62% import tariff. They don't realize that the clothes that they buy contain a 45% tariff. And so the list goes on. It's not apparent in the way that your VAT is, because it's written on your till slip. It's simply not there. And I just don't think most people have any sense of it.
And the politicians have put this in place. And, well, some of our suspicious minds would say are benefiting personally from the status quo and don't have an incentive to get rid of it. So do we have any hope that there'll be positive consequences from the September review in Parliament?
Well, we'll have to see the details of that. I'm not even sure who has been appointed to do the review at the moment. I don't know. My guess on this would be, though, that it would not be acceptable for the review to come back and say, look, the whole subsidy program is a terrible idea and we should shut it down. So, I'm thinking that the sort of person who wins this contract is probably aligned with the program. Now, that's perhaps an unfair comment, but I can't imagine that, the political cost for the government to let go of the automotive program, and I'm not suggesting they should, I'm just saying the political cost of that would be so high that I would guess they would make sure that that doesn't happen.
Donald Mackay, thanks as ever for your insights, and I'm sure that the tribe is just as delighted to hear you again on our platform.
Thank you, Alec.
That was Donald Mackay of X8 Global Trade Advisors. Plenty there for September's parliamentary review to chew on. Plenty for you to think about next time you're pricing a new car and realizing exactly how much of it you've already paid for. Well, a recap of today's show. Who really owns the JSE? Two-thirds black-owned, according to the common sense, once you take out foreign holdings. It does put a deep dent into the nothing has changed a narrative that is being put forward by so many in our country. And we had a look at the Mkhwanazi story, the anniversary, just 1 year on today, and how much has changed. There's been real accountability delivered, maybe for the first time in this republic of no consequences. Real consequences are there, but still unanswered questions on 2021 and Mkhwanazi's own conduct. And then the cherry double dip, that 40 billion rand a year, seven companies getting from taxpayers and a South African car buyer who's footing the bill without knowing it. Thanks for being with us today. Go back to biznews.com for the full story on that JSE ownership piece and Mattison's Mkhwanazi column. And there's a whole lot more as well. And I want to, before I leave, give you a little insight into something really strange that happened today. I was interviewing William Sanderson Mayer, who is the longest serving political columnist in South Africa. We are going to be running that in tomorrow, the full interview in tomorrow's Edge, BizNews Edge. But boy, this really caught me by surprise. A recap of the Nhlanhla Nene chairman episode.
It's a Grecian style tragedy. Here we have a man who has potential, who has done good things, and he's destroyed himself. I don't believe.
Well, we weren't going to play that, but William is such a good sport. He said, why not? Until tomorrow, cheerio. In uncertain times, good information is priceless. The BizNews Conference is heading back to the Drakensberg. Join me, Alec Hogg, from the 11th to the 14th of August for BNC 9, Champagne Sports Resort, where it all began and where our community gathers for honest conversations, smart investing insights, and direct access to some of South Africa's sharpest minds. Come and rub shoulders with the best we've got. 28 keynote speakers, 3 days. Seats are available now. Book your seat by clicking the link in the description. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox. Sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.